Fred Film Radio, International Film Festival, Rotterdam, Netherlands.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2018 International Film Festival, Rotterdam. And I'm very pleased to be joined by director Travis Beard. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, happy to be here.
And you're presenting a documentary called Rockabool. Would you like to maybe introduce it for our listeners who are not familiar with it yet?
Rockabool chronicles the first and only metal band in Afghanistan. It follows their life, their sort of peak and their death as the band had to disband because the country got more insecure and the environment around that. So living in Kabul, living in a country which has been occupied to a certain sense by a Western force and living under that sort of umbrella and the conflict that comes with that, and trying to be a rock band or a metal band and express yourself in that kind of scenario.
So what's the situation there with music?
Now or back then?
Back then and now.
Well, back then, I mean, we refer to it as the golden years. So from, let's say, 2006 to 2011, it was actually quite a happy and fun time to be in Kabul. And I know that sounds quite strange, but it was true because there was a flow of money into the country. Western aid was coming in, which meant there was a boom in the economy, both for the local Afghan community and for the expat community living in Kabul. And because of this sort of boom, there was a lot of celebration. In regards to the end of the week, we would all go out and have drinks and party. And inside that little community, there was a music scene that blossomed, which I was part of. And that music scene grew and grew and grew to the point where we had festivals. So those early years were amazing, and it was very vibrant. It was like what you would sort of imagine the punk scene was when it was born in Britain back in the 70s. It had that kind of energy, and it all imploded in the end because the West left. They withdrew from Afghanistan, and as they withdrew, insecurity got to a point where you couldn't actually secure a venue, or you couldn't secure a concert, and so therefore you wouldn't get an audience. And so it kind of imploded on itself, and by the end of the film, right. I don't want to be a spoiler, but it doesn't have a great ending. It doesn't have a happy ending.
So how did you meet him?
So I was living in Afghanistan, I was a journalist, and I was a musician for many years before, and I kind of joined a band, as you do, when I was in Kabul, and we were gigging around town.
Well, as you do when you're in Kabul, you join a band.
I know, it sounds really strange, but we had this small expat scene, and the bands were just doing cover songs. It was really kind of, you know, pretty lame scene, and I got in there, and I said to my band, White City, I said, come on, let's start doing some originals. So we started doing original songs, and then another band popped up, expat community, and then the first Afghan band sort of came from nowhere. They popped out of the woodwork, and so we all of a sudden we had this little scene of like three or four bands, and you know, each week we'd have a different sort of lineup, and the expat community would get together, they'd be drinking, they'd be partying, and we'd just, you know, throw these sort of slapped gigs together. It was great. And then I found this band called District Unknown, and they were a bunch of young boys who were aspiring to be a metal band.
Right.
But they couldn't play. And I mean, they really couldn't play. They didn't know chord structures. They didn't know scales. They didn't know how to strum. They didn't know nothing. But I had a studio, a little makeshift backyard studio. I said, look, here's my instruments. Here's my studio. Go and have some fun and go and see if you can find what you're trying to search for. And after 6 months, they kind of had a sound, and we went, okay, we'll put you on stage. And we put them on stage, and I watched the audience, and the audience kind of was like into it. And I was like, hey, this is actually not too bad. And so they grew, and they grew into a band where they wrote their own songs, and they started to perform more regularly, and they actually got a following. And from that, it grew into the scene. By that point, was like, let's say 2010, 2011, was actually starting to flourish, where we get people coming to our gigs rather than just going to a venue to drink. By that point, we realized that we need to expand into the greater community, which meant the Afghan community. So we tried to sort of find locations or venues where we could facilitate a concert in a secure way, but actually have the local public coming. Because in Afghanistan, everything is behind compound walls. You live behind a compound wall, not just because of security, but because of culture. And so everyone has to go through doors and gates to get to any kind of venue. And so we actually put together the first concerts for Afghans, and that was maybe like 100 people. And it was successful, And that was great. And then more bands popped up out of the woodwork, and before we knew it, we had like a 10-band scene.
Interesting. But when did you decide to start filming?
I filmed the first day the band walked in my studio.
Oh, right.
And I wasn't a filmmaker, I was a photographer. But I had a video camera, and I said, look, this is a really particular juxtaposition. We have metal, or aspiring to metal, in an Islamic state, an Islamic republic, and that's what Afghanistan is. And so I just pressed record. I didn't know what I was doing, but I got those first sort of fundamental moments where the band was discovering themselves, and it's pretty much the most important part of the start of the film. And you see them stumbling through, like all teenagers do when they start a band. They stumble through the discovery of trying to find their sound. And they found their sound, and from there it grew into a scene, and they got a following. And they had Afghans that would come to their concerts, particularly to see them. And so that went fantastic. And then we got to a point where it got a bit stagnated because there was only so many people we could fit into these venues. And I said, the scene needs to grow. And so I came up with the idea to host a festival. And so I went to the American embassy, I went and saw Satan, and I had a chat to him, and he said, hey, I can give you some money. And I went, great, I need some money to make a festival. And we put on the first rock festival in 35 years.
Wow.
And that was very successful. We had a lot of publicity, to the point where we were asked to do it again the next year. And we did it for 3 years. 3 years, the festival grew every year. It went from one day to 2 days to 3 days. We went from one stage to two to three stages. We went from five bands to 15 bands to 25 bands. Each year it grew, and the audiences got bigger as well. And it was going really well. And unfortunately, security took a dive, and there was a point where we just had to say, you know, we can only do so much.
Right.
Because the one thing we never wanted was an incident where an audience member would be harmed or a musician would be harmed, because that's not what we were doing. I'm trying not to spoil the film. So.
Right, but it's interesting. So at one point, security took a dive. So when was that point?
So in 2011, the Americans, or the Western forces, which was NATO, decided to hand over the keys, in a sense, to the Afghan authority. So they said, you guys can look after Kabul, and you can secure your own city. Because this is about transition. And we're going to leave by 2014, so here's the keys to the city.
Yeah.
And you're going to man all the checkpoints, and you're going to police your own city. Great in theory, but in a country which is, I think, the second most corrupt country in the world after Somalia, it's really hard to keep that fortress secure. And so people slip through, and the so-called people who want to disrupt the country, I'm not going to call them terrorists because they're not terrorists, they would be able to get through and do these so-called attacks. And so this instability increased, and to the point where it's not safe to walk on the streets. And so from 2011 to 2014, there was a spike in attacks, and Kabul became one of the most dangerous cities in the world, and it still is today.
Right.
So you have this paradigm of, what do you have? You want to have the Western forces, you know, occupying and securing the country, or do you hand it over to the local community, but then the country spirals into mayhem and chaos? Mm. And I don't want to get too much into politics, but our film does address politics. It's not just about metal.
But metal itself is kind of a political thing. I mean, I feel like it's a revolution.
Well, there's been a lot of documentaries, and there's been a lot of writing about, you know, how metal is a great platform or vehicle for expression, and especially in conflict zones. Because it reflects the environment you live in. And these boys wrote songs about civilian casualties. They wrote songs about what it's like to be in a suicide blast and the sound after that blast. They wrote a song called 2 Seconds After the Blast, because one of their members was in an attack. And he talks about what happened afterwards and how he couldn't hear anything. And there was this pitch, this sound, that was the loudest thing he's ever heard in his life. And to try and replicate that in music. And so this came through in their lyrics and through their songs.
2 seconds.
2 seconds after the blast.
Of course, these are all things that, you know, some people there don't want anyone to be talking about, let alone like make songs about it, right? Mm.
I mean, look, I think for them, for the boys in the band and for their followers, it was a way for them to get out their frustrations, to talk about the daily, not even just the horrors, the daily mayhem that they lived in. Because, you know, there's not an attack every single day, but the problem in a place like Afghanistan is there's always the potential of an attack.
Yeah.
So when you go to the shop to buy your bread, when you go to school, when you go to your job, it's always in the back of your mind. It was the same for me in the 7 years I lived there. You try to go about your every day, and you did, but it was always there, yeah, that it could be around the corner. And that actually has quite an effect on your state of mind.
I would presume so. But yeah, one of the things that I love about this documentary is that, you know, watching this, I mean, I could recognize myself, you know, when I started a band or like...
Well, I mean, look, from what I've seen of working in the Islamic world for many years, music does transcend boundaries, absolutely. And metal, on top of that, even more. And so a teenager in Afghanistan is no different to a teenager in America or a teenager in Ireland or a teenager in Zimbabwe.
Right.
They all are trying to discover themselves, and a lot of them use a genre like metal to do that. And we were quite lucky because we lived there for so long, we actually captured a lot of the daily life. And I think that's something you'll see in this film that you don't see in the mass media reports in the news channels every day, is that you get to see real Afghanistan, because I filmed a lot just because I was living there. And so for the viewer, you get to see, okay, there's this metal band that progresses and evolves. There's a scene that evolves, but there's also a country and a city and an environment that evolves around the film. And I think for people who don't know a lot about Afghanistan, they can even take a lot out of that. You don't have to be a metal fan to enjoy this film. You just need to be curious.
I mean, I would love to ask you more questions, but like just that curiosity, and maybe, you know, it doesn't have much to do with the film itself, but how did you end up in Afghanistan?
Well, I was a journalist.
Right.
I was in London at the time. 9/11 happened, and I was on my way to Yemen. And Yemen decided to close its borders to tourists. And I was like, well, where am I going to go? And I spent a lot of time in Iran, so I thought, I'll go back to Iran. So I went to Iran, and I met a BBC journalist. He said, hey, I'm going to Afghanistan. I said, Afghanistan? Yeah, right. He said, do you want to come with me? And so I went to Afghanistan, and I got what they call the Afghan bug. And the Afghan bug is this unexplainable itch that you get because it's such an enchanting country.
Yeah.
And I went there and I fell in love with it. And it took me a couple of years to get back there and base myself there. But once I was there, I didn't want to leave. And a lot of my friends, a lot of my colleagues identify with this because there's something about this country. It's mesmerizing. It's enchanting. It's a love-hate relationship. And, you know, if the country ever does, recoup itself and become stable again, I'd move back there tomorrow.
Right, so you're not there anymore, obviously.
No, I mean, while making this film, I was there, but the country is not in a good place at the moment, and I mean, 7 years was long enough.
Yeah.
I would love to go back there. There's more films to be made there, absolutely. There's now a very small, struggling hip-hop scene.
Wow.
And we're talking about super underground, because when we were there and we were supporting the rock/hip-hop scene, that was working, but now there's no one to do that. So these guys are like, there's four of them in the whole country. And they've reached out to me and said, hey, can we do something? I'm like...
How did they reach out to you?
Well, I mean, because I ran quite a strong music scene there,
okay,
people know me, and they've been using their cameras ever since, and they've been documenting their lives. But it's not as simple as just going, yeah, let's make a film.
Well, listen, thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
And I remind the listeners that the film is called Rockabool. That's the right pronunciation. Right?
One word, Rockabool.
Rockabool. And that this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.